This is Guerrilla Project Management with Samad Aidan. We bring you engaging and thought-provoking conversations with today's leading project management experts and emerging influencers.
In the fast-moving pressure cooker world of change projects, developing mental toughness, agility, and stamina is a key factor in successfully coping with the constant and unavoidable stress of leading change and in paving the way for learning, creativity, and innovation for leaders and teams. Reframing, which is the process of reinterpreting the meaning of events and situations, is an effective strategy that can help leaders and their teams regulate their reactions to emotionally charged experiences. According to Annette Prun, scientists say that reframing ought to be in the water we drink. Annette shares a three-step method, Framestorm, for how to deliberately change our interpretations and perspectives and direct our attention to what creates resourcefulness. Annette is a pioneer of applied neuroscience and neuroleadership, turning the cutting-edge insights of neuroscience into down-to-earth tools. She is a social scientist, leadership trainer, motivational speaker, and professional certified coach. She recently published in the Neuroleadership Journal in 2012 and is the author of three books. One of Annette's books is Play Your Brain, which was published by Marshall Cavendish in 2011 and is currently being translated into Chinese. During the past 8 years, Annette's leadership development company worked with two of the top five biggest Nordic companies and Denmark's top three banks and has clients such as Lego, Roche, Vistas, the European Environment Agency, and Malmo Symphonic Orchestra. Here's my interview with Annette. Annette, welcome.
Thank you, Samad.
Annette, you're an expert on what is called reframing. Could you tell us more about what that is?
Sure. Reframing means to change how you think about a situation, and you do so in order to decrease its emotional impact. So basically, you could say that you deliberately reinterpret something in order to feel better or to boost your resourcefulness. And it helps you to direct your focus, it helps you to boost your results, and also to stay cool in a number of situations. To give you an example, I once worked with two women who had similar job functions, those of pitching for potential customers. And one of these women, she told me that she actually experienced such meetings as an exam, which created quite a bit of inner resistance in her and made her feel quite uncomfortable. And then the other woman looked at the first woman with surprise, and she said, Oh, do you know how I perceive them? And of course, the first woman would love to hear that. Mm-hmm. The second woman went, I see these meetings as my conquest. And then she raised her chest and she was flinging her arms about, and she was clearly displaying a very different body language. And I mean, obviously, these two framings are substantially different, an exam or my conquest. And the question is, of course, does it matter? And very likely it does matter. You know, it matters how you, it does make a difference in relation to how you spent your energy before these meetings, during these meetings, and also after those meetings. You know, what do you pay attention to? What do you notice? And which blind spots do you have? So let me give you a very down-to-earth example of what reframing really is. Now, let's think of a photographer. If we imagine that a photographer is present in a hall for a big political meeting, and he's been asked to bring home the great shot of the essence of what went on in this room. Now, he then has a range of choice that is boundless. He can choose to take a close-up shot of one politician or several politicians. He can take a wide-angle picture of the audience. He can bring home a photo of one man yawning or another man smiling and nodding. He can choose a worm's eyes view or hang in the chandeliers and look down. He is essentially constructing reality through his choice. The good question is, you know, is there an essence in what's going on? Well, the essence, the choice he makes is going to be his frame, and the potential other pictures that he could have brought back to his editor would be his reframings or his potential reframings. He could have taken a different shot, but he didn't. He could have taken a different shot and strengthened a different reality. Now, I find it interesting to look at this also in the light of the technology development that has taken place over the past decades. I mean, if we go back, say, 20 years in time, if we imagine that we were at a family event and we were going to like take a picture of basically the people attending, how many pictures would we typically take?
You probably take one or maximum two if you can keep them in the same spot.
Exactly. Right. And that second picture might be, you know, just in case someone would close their eyes or something like that. You would bring the film back to the studio, have it developed, and then you would come back after maybe 3 days and get your pictures. Now, this was what technology was like then. The interesting thing is that apart from like working with leaders, I've also started giving talks to teenagers. And it's so interesting to have that audience, because nowadays, you know, with the smartphones that teenagers have and most of us have now, but, you know, the teenage habits of having such a smartphone is completely different. You know, if they experience an event, it's not uncommon to take 20, 30, maybe even 50 pictures of the same thing happening. And then, you know, the rest of us, you know, the adults may think, you know, look at our teeth and think, all right then, you know, would you mind edit the pictures before you upload them all to Facebook? And for some reason, it doesn't happen. So they all get to
Right.
But I like this example because I think it shows that the ability to take different shots is not only possible, but it's actually second nature to a lot of people nowadays. So we do it with our hands. Now we need to learn how to do it in our minds with our brains. So how do I deliberately take different shots, different pictures? How do I view a situation in my life from different perspectives, thus creating new and more resourceful emotions?
I think that's a great analogy. I think the comparing the different technologies, the old technology, the old camera technology, where you're limited by one or two interpretation of an event versus new technology, digital technology, where you're able to take a number of pictures and a number of photos, really ties it into this ability to frame storm, which the name really says exactly what it is. You're basically creating a storm of interpretations, mm-hmm. And the ability to see an event or a cue or situation from different angles, it all ties it together. And I think it's a great analogy for thinking about why this frame storming is so important.
And the great thing here is that we don't have to worry about capacity, do we? You just keep on taking new shots, and the quirkier the better. And then you have this pool of alternatives, and then you choose the ones that you find to be most relevant. Interestingly, when we talk about reframing and framestorm here, we're not looking for right or wrong. We're not looking for truth or false either. We're looking for what builds more resourceful people. So does it create more or less resourcefulness? That's what we're after. It's just a different take, because a lot of people will ask themselves, you know, what is the right choice here? What is the right way for me? And you know what? I hear it so often. It's so much intertwined in our thinking, our cultures. You know, what is the right choice now? And what I see is that it creates a lot of fear in people, because we imagine that there's like one next step, and I better explore and find out what is the next step going to be. Whereas, you know, if we believe that there are many meaningful ways to travel, it becomes a completely different picture. And we're not looking for like one frame here that says it all or does it all or is going to work forever and ever. We could have a repertoire of particularly useful reframings that will strengthen us in a number of situations, because we all know, you know, situations where we may feel weak or not as powerful or nervous. And it's just very useful to build that self-awareness, you know, in situations like these. What would do it for me? What enables me to redirect my attention and be the best, or if not the best version of myself, then a very powerful version of myself? Scientists actually say that reframing ought to be in the water we drink. So just like iodine is added to table salt in a number of countries, and you can get vitamin D and B in your cornflakes, then human beings would actually gain benefit enormously if the ability to reframe was added to our frequent sips of water. And I think that's a very eloquent metaphor, and it shows us that really it is important. And at the same time, most people don't have a clue what reframing is about or how you do it, how it gets to be in your veins, so to speak. But in situations where you either feel trapped or stuck or less resourceful somehow, then it's actually possible to change how you look at things and thus change the emotions linked to this and also your results. It could be, for instance, the project manager, Tim, who frames the project team member, Frank, as a troublemaker who often criticizes the work of the team. And Tim, the project manager, he may well be able to take the relationship and the social dynamic with Frank to a different place by noticing other possible truths about Frank. Now, could you also view him as a quality assurer? Could you view him as a relentless innovator, for instance? Or maybe even a gift to the development of my own leadership? So these ways to redirect your attention. And when you redirect attention, you build new neural circuits in the brain. And being a project manager, there will be a number of situations where this is very important, because being a project manager, you need to ensure momentum. You want to avoid getting stuck. You want to juggle several interests, and often these interests are conflicting somehow. And you also want to prevent what you could call unproductive clashes in the team and meet deadlines, etc. So in all of these situations, we can actually strengthen ourselves enormously by growing a more flexible mindset, what I call a change mindset or a reframing mindset.
This is so relevant to project managers because of the onslaught of stress and conflict that we find ourselves in. And so this ability to reframe and be able to reinterpret events and cues and situations is critical.
Very much so.
Annette, what was the motivation for developing the FrameStorm method?
It's a good question, Samad. And actually, I developed the method because I found what you could call traditional reframing to be too much of an either-or, too much black or white. And the common belief is that if you, for instance, view a situation as a problem, you can then reframe it as a challenge and then get going. Or the common belief would be that you can reframe a job that from something that you dread to something that you find exciting, just like us. But to me, this is a rather simplistic approach, and it doesn't do the trick in the brain, because neurons that fire together wire together. This is also called Hebb's law, and it means that when two nerve cells in the brain fire simultaneously, then they team up, they become one. So for the exam woman I mentioned before, genuine reframing is not about convincing herself that she's on a conquest. It's a matter of disturbing the neural connections between the perception she holds here, an exam, and then the emotion here, the fear that triggers in particular situations. And then it's a matter of identifying relevant alternatives that she feels congruent with to allow for a constructive redirection of the attention. So it's not just a matter of taking over, the reframings or the framings of other people, but to create reframings that you feel congruent about yourself. And if you just turn the coin, as I call it, if you just, choose the other side of the coin, go from problem to challenge, for instance, then you stay within the same box of thinking. It actually often leads to suppression rather than to genuine reframing and transformation of meaning. And coming up with, let's say, one, two, or three reframings is, in my experience, seldom enough to change a perception. And that's why the FrameStorm method, it actually invites people to come up with as many as 15 to 30 reframings in order to create this disturbance, this change in the brain. So what you'll find is that FrameStorm is a process that's much richer and deeper. It's more lyrical, it's more philosophical, and it's way more practical. It draws upon the FrameStormer's unique body of experience and wisdom across all areas of life. So we're not just staying in the business box. We really want to connect ourselves with wisdom worldwide, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. So you're pretty much trying to rewire your brain.
That's what happens, because just as neurons that fire together wire together, then there are other brain principles, and two other important ones here are called neurons that are out of sync fail to link. And the third one here is neurons that fire apart wire apart. So what this means is that when we are capable of disturbing a connection, pausing a connection between a perception and an emotion, and create relevant alternatives, then we make the neurons go out of sync. So they fail to link. You can hear that a lot. Mm-hmm. Or some neuroscientists are not only neuroscientists, they're also quite, you know, they're poets, more or less. And the third one I mentioned here, neurons that fire apart, wire apart. It basically means that when you have successfully created this disturbance, then, you know, it's not a truth anymore. These meetings for the exam woman do not have to be perceived as an exam creating all this fear. She can create a new reality for herself. Because what happens in the brain is that when two neurons in the brain start firing at the same time, they team up. So they become as one. You also call it that you say that the cortical maps in the brain merge. So from then onwards, whenever she starts thinking about these meetings, you know, the fear is going to flare inside of her. And you probably know that from your own life also. You know, there'll be a number of situations where it has actually become your reality. You know, particular perception of a team member or a job or a process in the organization or a boss or whoever, it's just so interlinked now, the perception and the emotion, and thus also the behaviors that follow from that, have become so interlinked that they just seem to be, you know, true, but they are current truth or subjective truth or habitual truth, you could also call them.
Yeah, I remember when my dad, I was very young, and my dad quit smoking. And I remember the day, it was in the evening, and he, you know, he lit the cigarette, and I, you know, it was for probably the end time. I think we all children, and my mom told him, you know, I wish you just stop smoking. But he smoked probably for 30 years. Mm-hmm. And then that moment, took the cigarette out of his mouth, and he never put it back in for, you know, ever again. And it was that moment he rewired his brain, and he reframed exactly who he was, and this notion of him being with his family, mm-hmm. and his family needing him to quit smoking, and he never smoked again. And that was, to me, the first time where I realized that how the, you know, when you want something, you can rewire your brain to change it. And later on, you know, I learned, you know, as I became more interested in brain and through conversations with the experts like yourself, that indeed the brain is capable of this rewiring.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Indeed it is. It's a great example. And for him, probably that night did the trick. You know, some sort of reframing has happened in his brain that made it just a lot less attractive to go back to that old habit. Mm-hmm, there was something else to be won.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Okay, so Annette, so how does Framestorm method work? Would you give us an overview?
Yeah, sure. So, a framestorm consists of three steps, and they can be remembered by their ABC order. So the first step is ask calibrating questions. The second is begin the framestorm. And the third is choose your reframings. So ABC. And let's start with the first step here, ask calibrating questions. The idea here is to basically zoom in on your current framing and its emotional effects, and then to foresee the real-life consequences if you keep giving attention, and thus life, to this framing. So the relevant questions here are, what is my current framing of the situation or of the person? And then which emotional effects does this create in me? Now, does it make me more resourceful? Well, if it doesn't, let's move on, because then the next question is, if I continue to give life to this framing, where will that take me? And do I want that scenario to become my reality? Now, that's another yes-no question. And obviously, if you can see that the consequences of this framing is actually not going to help you a lot, it will take you to a place where you really don't want to be, then it's worth starting the framestorm. And that's when we started. And basically, it's a process of what you could call multiple reframings. So the second step, begin the framestorm, is about you going on and on in identifying new takes on the situation or relationship, and then keep stretching your interpretations in new ways. And I've identified a number of powerful questions that are worth asking, and I also mention some of them in the article that was just published recently in the Neuroleadership Journal 2012. And some of these questions would be, for instance, a person who loves the situation or a person who finds the situation really easy, how may he or she frame it? Or which benefits, which positive side effects does the situation give me or give others? Or if I was to reframe the situation in a humorous way, how might that sound? Or how could I frame the situation so that I would not want to miss out on it? That's another good question, you know. Mm-hmm. So I would not want to miss out on it. How should I view it, you know, to create those emotions inside of me, that sort of motivation? How would a wise person, for instance, one of, you know, of my personal role models, how would he or she view the situation? Or a fictional character? Or which mottos, which sayings may be useful to tap into here? If we go to the world of sport, you know, how might a professional XX player view such a situation? Or for that matter, if you do a time travel and you look back at this current situation 10 or 20 years from now, what may be the constructive learning? You know, these are all questions that bring you to a different place and stretch you more than, you know, our current thinking often does. And when we focus on these questions, then we pause the original frame and play creatively with meaning. And the reason why this makes sense is that actually our brains filter away so much sensory information all the time. If we look at the visual sensory information only of the virtually unlimited visual information available in the world around us, 10 billion bits per second arrive at the retina at the back of the eye. And of these, only a pathetic 100 bits per second make it to your conscious perception. So you go from 10 billion to 100 in a split second. And that's quite a pruning process. And the point here is that we only import a tiny, tiny bit of what's out there, what comes flooding towards us from the sensory market. And we could choose to pay attention to other parts of the sensory spectrum. And often other people pick other 100 than we do, you know, of
right.
the bits per second that are out there possible to pick. You know, if we have a conflict, if we misunderstand someone, or if we somehow feel stuck, well, there's a good chance that we pick 100 that are quite different from other people succeeding in this job or in this relationship. And it's worth just exploring which other bits per second could I pick? And right. research shows that changing our perception of things, our interpretations, is actually a most useful strategy for boosting our resourcefulness. And it dampens the amygdala of the brain, which is also known as the threat response of the brain. So it dampens fear. The frame sound process is very much a process of keep going. So until you have at least 15, 30 alternative reframings. And remember here that a frame sound process is not about criticizing or excluding options. It's about identifying options at this stage. Just keep going, keep going, keep going. And then at the next step, at the next stage, at stage three, you choose the ones that seem most relevant and most powerful. So what you basically do at that third stage is that you help yourself with successful implementation. It helps you to operationalize the frame storm. Now imagine you have 15 or 30 different reframings. It's kind of difficult to take them all back to your daily life and use them. And what's useful here is that you basically zoom in on typically two reframings that seem powerful, and then you work on installing them. You work on paying attention to them and experiencing the effects, the inner effects.
You know, what I was thinking about, Annette, is that when you generate all these types of frames and ways that you can look at a situation, for sure, because your brain has looked at different options, that undesirable or that less desirable or original less desirable interpretation mm-hmm. will almost fade away and become almost less effective or less memorable, and then probably in its way it's easier now for the brain to install one of the new interpretations. Is that what is happening?
Mm-hmm. That is what is happening, and it's a very, very fascinating process, because I mean I've written a book called Play Your Brain together with a neuroscientist, and he's very he finds it very intriguing to hear about how I work with this, because mm-hmm. it's very much a matter of pausing the original frame, and it's different from what most people would do as per default, because a lot of us, we have been trained in bringing the problem, you know, bring it to the table. Let's talk about it. Let's confront it. Let's be direct about it. And actually, if you look at this from a brain perspective, it doesn't make much sense. There's a point here in pausing, as you say, you know, it's going to fade away because you give attention to something else and you create that disturbance. I would say that, you know, we pause it, we don't forget it. You know, it's there. We're not suppressing anything. It's still there. We just pay attention to something else. And the more playful we can be when we do this framestorm, you know, the better, because we enrich the picture very much. And when we are done with playing, then the original framing is, in my experience, it's never going to be the same.
It's almost weakened while they're making room for other new frames to take its place and become strengthened.
Yes, yes. And it doesn't mean that another a reframing, another frame here becomes dominant all of a sudden, you know, just all of a sudden I forget everything about the original one and the other one takes over. That's not the point. The point is that you have identified several, you know, typically several of these 15 to 30 reframings are highly relevant. You can draw upon these. They create a patchwork of new meanings, and it just becomes less dominant. You know, the other framing change in the brain. Somebody, it's similar to tramping new paths in the forest. I don't know if you like to go and to walk in nature. I personally love it to be out there in the mountains and in the forest, and I find this metaphor to be really useful, because when we want to create change or install a new habit in our lives, then we should be aware of which path we're walking down, basically. Mm-hmm. And if we have walked down one path in the past, you know, we need to know which other path, identify another path to walk down, and then just do it. Every time you walk down this new path, it's going to be more and more visible. It's going to be more and more well-defined. And when you leave a path in the forest and you don't walk down that path anymore, what happens?
It disappears in a way.
Mm-hmm. Disappears. It becomes overgrown, less well-defined, less visible. And what a lot of people do is that if they find themselves on the old path, let's just say once or twice, they start thinking, they start questioning whether they can change successfully, whether it's possible for them to change. And if we stay within this way of thinking, within this metaphor, it's no big deal, really. If you find yourself on the old path, as soon as you realize you're on the old path, you just need to gently, graciously redirect your own footsteps to the new path. And every time you can do that, you are going to strengthen the new path in the forest. And this is how the brain works when it comes to neural circuitry also. So it's not, instead of turning it into a big deal that, oh, I'm walking down that old path again, and just redirect the tension. Because every time you get fed up by yourself, you know, for walking down that old path, then you're going to strengthen the nerve connections you do not want to strengthen. Mm-hmm. And this is why if you ask me, a lot of what we're doing, or people are doing in the world of also psychotherapy and old school psychology, we are going to reframe that very soon. Because we give attention to what we would actually like to weaken. Mm-hmm. And the point here is to strengthen the scenarios, strengthen the vision, strengthen the goals, strengthen the path that you would rather walk down.
Well, now that we understand the framework, mm-hmm. And it's clear in my mind now, walk us through an example of how leaders can apply the framestorm method to manage a leadership challenge.
Hmm. Well, a powerful example comes from Nuevo, which was a huge IT transformation initiative in an organization. And it would basically mean that all the well-known IT programs and procedures would change overnight. So employees would go home one day, and when they started working the next day, everything would look different, you know, when they turned on the computers. So they'd known about this for about 2 years, and there was not only latent resistance in parts of the organization, but also quite a bit of fear. People were worried about this, you know, what was going to happen, how would it influence me, my status, my role, etc. And so you could say that the original framing was the Nuevo change process equals something dangerous. And the inner emotional effects were fear and uncertainty. And this led to stress, to moaning, and also to performance drops, obviously, because when you spend a lot of time worrying about what's going to happen, if you have the amygdala alerted in your brain, it's going to steal energy going to steal productive energy from you. It turns out that the brain runs off a particular energy, 25 watts, and there is just that 25 watts. So even though you and I may sit here thinking, you know, oh, I've got 60 watt for sure in my brain. No, you haven't. We've got 25 watt. And if the amygdala gets activated, it's going to steal energy. So it's going to decrease your ability to problem solve, to be creative, to basically process information. And this was what happened in the situation. So doing the framestorm helped identifying lots of new takes on the new over process. They came up with lots, and I will only mention a few here, but some of the reframings they came up with were these. Nuevo is an opportunity to get the same starting point. Nuevo is a chance to increase employee and customer satisfaction. Future generations in the organization will thank us for our willingness to take responsibility. This is the end of passive play. If big changes had to be put out for referendum, we would never have gotten computers. Nuevo is a common job we'll go through together. Nuevo makes us save £20 million per year. We become first movers in the industry. Nuevo is a chance to prioritize and tidy up the toolbox. It turned out in this organization they had actually scraped 600 different Excel templates already. So there was quite a bit to tidy up. Now, a couple of others. Growth is the only evidence of life. Our only security is our ability to change. And also this, Nuevo equals a mirror of life. It's a fresh start. So do you sense what's happening in this process?
Right, yeah.
We pause this original fearful framing, and then we use our wisdom, our experiences, our creativity, and also our quirkiness to come up with new takes. I mentioned this, the three brains of principles, neurons that fire together, wire together, neurons that are out of sync, fail to link, and also neurons that fire apart, wire apart. And this is what happens. When we disturb this connection, the link becomes weaker. And when we simultaneously introduce alternative reframings, then it becomes possible for new neural circuits in the brain to be formed.
That's a wonderful example. I really like the fact that you can give an example from a leadership situation that most organizations are going through, which is a major change, especially a technology change. Mm-hmm. So for me, this example really resonated with me. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about the neuroscience underpinnings of the model.
Well, apart from the principles I already introduced that had to do with neurons that fire together, et cetera, then there are two neuroscientific principles at stake when you reframe. And one has to do with the reconsolidation of memories, and the other has to do with what's called attention density. And let's start with the first one, reconsolidation of memories, because it turns out that when a memory, and a frequently activated framing is a memory too, when a memory is recalled, a particularly high level of neuroplasticity follows. Now, neuroplasticity is about the changeability of the brain, that the brain is moldable, it's changeable, it's plastic. And we talk a lot about self-directed neuroplasticity these days, which basically means that you can change the wiring of the brain through your thoughts, through your mental habits. Now, this allows for the memory to be modified in various ways. So you recall the memory, and then it's open to change. So you can both update the memory, and you can also change the memory strength. Now, this is a way of destabilizing an existing memory, and particularly in the minutes and hours following a reactivation, it is particularly open. It's called a window of vulnerability. Is particularly open, and what happens in the brain is that a quick recalibration takes place, and new knowledge can be added, or certain memory contents can be weakened or strengthened for that matter. And that's what we do in framestorms. The original framing is recalled, which makes it open to this disruption by the interfering events that follow. And then research shows that the memory trace actually only takes a relatively short time to restabilize, which may be why I find that framestorms seem to work at a surprising pace. It is as if when you start reframing using this framestorm method, it is as if there's no going back, so to speak, to the original framing. It does enable you to boost the power of the way you look at things, your framings. Mm-hmm. Now, another cool aspect of a framestorm seems to be what's called attention choreography. It means that the gentle and the playful redirection of attention in ways that create resourcefulness. And attention actually comes from Latin, and it means to reach towards. So whether what you give attention to now is something you really want more of or less of, you will get more of it because you reach out for it and you allow it into the attentional spotlight. And attention turns out to be the maker and shaper of neural circuits in the brain. And regular sustained attention can change the neural circuitries. And a cool term here is attention density. So the more you sustain your focus on something, the denser the attention gets and the more hardwired that habit or interpretation will become. So the three neuroscientific principles in place here, they are called Hebb's law, the neurons that fire together, wire together, neurons that are out of sync, fail to link, and neurons that fire apart, wire apart. That's one. The second one is called reconsolidation of memories, and it means that when you recall something, when you recall a memory or a framing, it is particularly open to being changed. You can add a new context, basically. You create a new context. And when you store that memory again, then it is not the same memory as it was before. You add the emotions created while doing the framestorm and also the good new takes you have come up with. They kind of become one. They get to be added to the original framing. And the third one has to do with attention density, and it means that what you pay attention to is becoming your reality. So when you pay attention to something, you reach towards it. And the more you sustain your focus on something, the denser your attention gets and the more hardwired that habit or that interpretation will become in your brain.
I am curious to know what feedback you're getting from leaders who are applying the model in their practice of leadership.
Now, what they say to me is that framestorm can be used in any situation to get you back on a more productive track, especially when you work with people and the motivation of people, and project managers do that. It is key to be able to spot framings that undermine the good work. And it's also key to be able to facilitate the redirection of attention to framings that strengthen the coping and the performance. Now, when you framestorm, you pave the way for learning, for innovation, and also for relational success in everyday leadership. And you build what I would call change mindsets. Mm-hmm. A leader I worked with, he happened to work in a bank. He had started fearing robberies. Now, he did a powerful framestorm process and ended up concluding that when reframing can be done successfully in such a sensitive area, it can be done in all areas. And he also said that with a wise focus, you can turn any experience into something positive. And he ended up not fearing robberies anymore, but feeling resourceful and capable instead. What is really interesting about the reframing of robberies here, is that a framestorm does not only dampen fear here and now when you do the framestorm, it also builds the person up to cope with a future situation in an utmost resourceful way. So what would be happening if such a robbery were to happen to this particular leader is what scientists call a kind of race between the emotional information and the reframing information in the brain. And the implications of this are that it's possible to prepare yourself for any challenging situation ahead, basically, because in the reframing process, in the framestorm here, you expose yourself to a little bit of the situation that may happen in the future. Only do you connect the potentially unpleasant situation with resourceful reframings set out loud in a mindful, calming, reflective voice, and also you connect them to more resourceful emotions. So you pave the way for letting new neurons fire and wire together, and thus you store a more effectful response to the situation in the brain, and you can tap into that in the future.
It's almost like you have this framing on standby just in case, and it gets activated as soon as it's almost like a shortcut waiting to be activated, so you're not spending too much time in the going down the negative path.
Yeah, it's a great metaphor. So it's actually there on standby, but obviously you need to work it into your muscles. You can't just do this framestorm once and then expect it to work if you are in a robbery, let's say, you know, a month from now. But you are absolutely right. And this is one of the surprising new findings of neuroscience, that, you know, the scientists once thought that you kind of had to dive into these emotions to, like, get rid of them, so to speak. But Actually, you know, it's a kind of race in the brain. You have the emotional information raising inside of you and the reframing information at the same time. And by doing this in a right way, you know, the reframing information can become the most powerful one. So it will dampen your fearful emotions and they are there on standby. And obviously, you know, when you become a bit of an expert in this, it's not hard. It doesn't take long. You know, it can take you maybe a couple of minutes to come up with 10, 15 reframings. And then choose, you know, the most relevant one. You'll just become an expert basically on noticing when you feel that you are leaking resourcefulness. It could be any situation, you know, you feel, oh, and then just become aware of your framing and how could you tweak it in order to make the most of the situation. So it can become a very fluent process when you take it to heart.
Mm-hmm. And especially when you are applying this method to leadership challenges, it's important to go in with that mindset that you're not looking for that right and wrong, black and white, good or bad interpretations or solutions, because the type of leadership challenges we face don't come packaged that way either. They don't come with the, you do this and you're going to get this. It's not that easy. There are so many consequences that you need to take a look at. There are so many dimensions. There are so many variables. And so it's critical to go in with a different mindset than the typical way we try to approach binary type of problems, or like where you can apply an algorithm, you can apply a process, you do step one, step two, step three, and you get it. The type of problems we face in leadership, they're typically very multidimensional,
complex.
Very complex, and so therefore you cannot use a binary thinking for a complex type of problems, right?
Mm. And that's also when I mentioned that reframing is very useful. When you feel stuck, I don't just mean stuck in a task. I mean stuck in a mindset, because a lot of the problem that we'd be facing in a situation is often down to us being inflexible in our mindsets, us believing that, you know, there is one truth and I happen to be the one holding the truth, right?
Right.
It tends to be
right.
So if only the other people around me would do this or that, or if only you'd stop doing that, or if only she would start saying this or that, everything would become much better. So this is the illusion that a lot of us seem to live in. And the more we can just take it home to ourselves and be aware of which tiny tweaks make me more capable of coping, of getting closer to relevant goals in this particular situation. It's very much down to the tiny tweaks. And to like me being stuck in an idea that I hold the truth, and if only other people could see it, you know, things would be so much easier.
Yeah. And that kind of thinking is tough as you rise in leadership echelon. It becomes more and more critical to have an open mind and be able to see different views. And this frame storming method is a great way of getting practice in it.
Absolutely.
Anit, how can our audience find out more about the model and more about you and follow your work?
Mm-hmm. Well, as you mentioned, Samad, I've written an article about Framestorm, and it was published in the Neuro Leadership Journal 2012, and it's also available for download from my webpage. So that would be my name, or www, and then annetprain.com. And I'm also offering a free online course on reframing. It's via the Udemy platform. It's a great platform. They want to disrupt and democratize education in this world. And my course is there. It's a course on reframing, the neuroscience of reframing and how to do it. So it introduces like five core basic ways of reframing. In the beginning of 2013, I'll also launch another online course. You could call it a masterclass. And it's about Framestorm, the process we've talked about before, and it's more advanced, it's more powerful, that will be available in the beginning of 2013 also. And also the listeners can learn more about the principles of the brain and how to make the most of them through my latest book, Play Your Brain. It's available through Amazon in English now. It's currently being translated into complex Chinese, but it is available now in English. And basically, we kickstart that book by stressing that it's dead easy to turn your brain into an opponent, because it follows certain rules, And if you are unaware of those rules, a lot of things will seem more uphill than they need to be. So becoming aware of what drives the brain and how to navigate in that, not just your own brain, but also the brains of other people, is key to your success.
Can you give our audience your website address one more time?
www and then annetteprehn.com. So annetteprehn.com. I'm also on LinkedIn, so you're more than welcome to connect with me via LinkedIn.
Well, Annette, thank you so much for the opportunity to talk to you. Thank you for your time and these wonderful insights about neuroscience, about the basis for framestorming, and how it can make a difference in the lives of leaders. And I look forward to having you come back and talk to us some more next year.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to Guerrilla Project Management. You can hear more Guerrilla Project Management podcasts on iTunes and read more at guerrillaprojectmanagement.com.